touchdown machine for the Houston Cougars.
Sasser again, just kind of taking over right now.
That's NBA stuff right there. He is a baller.
Stick it in your pipe and smoke it, baby.
Yes! Welcome to the Scott Coleman Podcast. We are back for the last time in the year 2022, the 30th time in this current season, and the 59th time in this calendar year, talking all things Houston Cougars here. And I'm going to use the royal we fairly often tonight because it's just me. Dustin had very much been planning on joining the show as per usual. Something came up at the end of his workday, very unavoidable, prevented him ultimately from being here tonight recording with us. But rest assured, Dustin is fine. Dustin's loved ones are fine, but we both agreed that probably not very feasible to get on tonight and talk Houston Cougars. And I think we also both agreed that not putting out an episode until after men's basketball started conference play, a full 5 days after the Independence Bowl, wouldn't be the best. I think we were overdue to talk about what was a very eventful week for your Houston Cougars. We're going to, as I just mentioned, talk a lot of things Independence Bowl. We got some football recruiting talk for your recruiting heads here who don't get a lot of that on here, but I think early signing day is certainly reason enough to talk about who is coming in to the Cougar football program, men's basketball, women's basketball, starting conference play. Even got a little volleyball recruiting update in there. So a lot of Cougar stuff to talk about tonight. Hope you can stick around with me. I'm curious whether, once I say that it's only going to be me on the show, whether there's any number of listeners that are just like, you know what, really don't like that guy. I'm sticking here for Dustin, but going to jump off here 20 seconds in once he made it very much clear that it'll only be him. I don't know, but I hope all of you stuck around tonight to listen to me talk about what was a very exciting week, a positive ending for Cougar football that I'm not sure we all saw happening. Gonna mention at the top here, of course, we are proud members of the 1012 network. Check out the 1012 pod, talking all things Big 12 conference over there, wherever you put podcasts in your ears. A number of really great school specific shows, especially as we kind of get into a number of the Big 12 bowls this weekend, the next. So a lot of great school specific shows over there as well. Got also plug our own stuff here, mentioned are now 4 episodes old, but I think very fantastic. I think stronger start than we expected. Premium episodes, if you want, in addition to this great weekly free contests, some premium content in your ears on a mostly weekly basis. I think we've hit weekly so far in this about, I would say, month-ish commitment to putting out premium content. A number of you have become new patrons. I've gotten some great feedback from those of y'all out there who are existing patrons as well. We just did a patron Q&A. We're going to start in the new year working in a Patreon question or questions of the week for those of y'all who support us, giving you a chance to answer your questions on a, I would hope to say, weekly basis here on this podcast. So if you want to support the show, if the idea of premium podcast episodes sounds appealing to you, only $5 a month or whatever contribution level you want to ultimately give at, go to shpodcast.com/support or patreon.com/shpawdcast, both those places. You can give a recurring monthly donation and get some great free content as well. If you're not really into the whole monthly thing, but if you want to give us a one-time gift, we are still technically, I guess, in the Christmas-ish time of the year. You can also do a one-time donation via PayPal at shpodcast.com/support, which I mentioned earlier. And of course, we are brought to you tonight by our good friends at the good brand, Home Field Apparel, homefieldapparel.com. If you haven't gone over there already, what are you waiting for? Get some fantastic Cougar gear there. They have a great Cougar collection, multiple Sailor Cougars, a Phi Slam Ajama shirt in there. I just on my most recent Casual Friday wore the Sailor Coug shirt. It was absolutely fantastic. Paired it with an ugly Christmas sweater. It was just the absolute sartorial hit of my office. If you want to save some money on that as well, if you want to look good, use the promo code Holman12, HOLMAN12 at checkout at Home Field. You're going to save 15% off your first order with Home Field Apparel. You're going to look absolutely great doing it. The most unique, the most comfortable shirts are going to be an absolute staple of your collection. You're going to be talk of your tailgate, the talk of your section. You're going to be the talk of the Fertitta Center, wherever you are consuming Houston Cougars sports. That's homefieldapparel.com. Look good, support our show, do all of the above, and support our good friends over the good brand. So, like I said earlier, we're actually going to end this football season on a positive note, something I don't think those of us who have followed this program all season maybe felt was a certainty. And it wasn't easy or pretty, but I'm glad that Cougar football was able to end a season that was frustrating, that was up and down, with what ended up being a comeback victory last Friday at what certainly seemed to be an absolutely frigid Independence Bowl over the Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns. And while I think there are plenty of things worthy of critique from this game, which I'm sure I'll get to here as we discuss this game further, I thought in the broadest sense, this game was a positive endorsement of the guys in this Cougar football program. They all elected to stick around and play in this pre-Christmas bowl game against a 6-6 Sunbelt team in what looked like on TV absolutely miserable conditions. But before I get any further, for one last time in this 2022 season, let's talk about how the game was won, mercifully doing how the game was won to end the season instead of how the game was lost. And for not the first time this year, Cougar football won a game but began with a pretty inauspicious start. Ragin' Cajuns get the ball on the opening kickoff, promptly march down the field with a 15-play, 75-yard drive, culminates in a touchdown pass from their starting quarterback Chandler Fields to his tight end Johnny Lumpkin, features some pretty depth footwork by Lumpkin to get a foot in and get what would ultimately be the Cajuns' only touchdown of the afternoon. While that opening possession would be the only touchdown for your opposition, the Cajuns were a much, much more effective offense, at least for the first half of this game, than the Cougars. And again, pretty low bar there. The Cougars would open this game going punt, turnover on downs, punt in their first three possessions. I will say that second UH possession was somewhat promising. The Cougars ended up having a fourth and short on the Cajun 32, but stop me if this sounds familiar. An unbelievably predictable delayed draw between the tackles was stuffed for a loss by the Cajuns, who got the ball back. They would ultimately extend their lead to two scores. They made field goal after that turnover on downs. Immediately after, Cougar offense goes three and out. Eric Garor returns the Cougar punt 33 yards, set the Cajun offense up pretty nicely on the Cougar 27-yard line. And I think one of the more pivotal points of this game was the Cougar D stopping the Cajun offense there from even getting a first down. Cajuns had to sell for a long field goal and now a 13-0 lead. Just under 7 minutes left in the first half, Cougar offense finally showed some signs of life. You saw Joseph Manjack IV back for the first time since, I believe, September, have a catch for a first down on a second long. You saw the Tune to Dell connection converting a much-needed fourth and short in Cougar territory. But I think the obvious two biggest plays from this first drive for a touchdown were a pair of Keyshawn Carter receptions. You had the first one, a 30-yard reception on first down, an extra long coming off a penalty, and the second one, two plays later, on nicely placed Clayton Tune ball to Carter for the Cougars' first touchdown. Unfortunately, missed the point after attempt. The score is now 13-6 in favor of the Cajuns. Cajuns get the ball back for what would functionally be the final first half possession. They did kick it off after, admittedly, but not a real possession there. Cougs had a chance to get the ball, get the offense back on the field, get the ball back. Cajuns were going for it on fourth and one at midfield, but as happened far too often this season, the Cougars committed an inexplicable penalty, this time jumping into the neutral zone, giving the Cajuns a free first down. But the clock was on the Cougs' side a bit here, as ultimately the Cajuns would have to settle for a field goal. Gave you some hope with coming out of the half down 16-6. Cougars had a 13-play, 70-yard touchdown drive, converted three times on third down, the last one being a fortunate gift for the Cougars, a Cajun face mask off a reception that was short of the sticks. Tune would find Tank Dell over the middle on first and goal, 2 yards out, cut the lead to one score, 16-13 Cajuns. Worth noting also on that touchdown, Dell had a really nice double move off the line of scrimmage, beat Cajun cornerback Trey Amos there for the touchdown. The Cajuns would turn the ball over two plays in their next possession, thanks to a great play in this one by one of your seniors, Cedric Williams. Didn't just get the strip, stripped Cajun running back Chris Smith and recovered the fumble in the Cajun backfield. Cougars would get the ball down to the Cajun 5-yard line, but unfortunately, once again, the Cougar offense was stuffed on fourth and short on a run, came away empty-handed from what was a really promising possession at that point. Felt like a missed opportunity at the time, trailing 16-13, but defense, I thought, common theme here, did a really good job in this game, keeping the Cajuns from doing much in the second half. Peyton Sawyer ended up returning the ensuing punt 25 yards, set the Cougars up deep in Cajun territory for the second possession in the row, and once again, Cougar offense was able to get down to the Cajun 2-yard line, but ultimately had to settle for a game-tying chip shot field goal by Kyle Ramsey after an incompletion and two unsuccessful runs once you got into the goal-to-go situation. For everything, really at this point, the next Cajun possession really looked like they were retaking the lead. Switched quarterbacks, the Cajuns did, from Chandler Fields to true freshman Zion Chris. Got down to the Cougar 9-yard line before Chris Smith's second fumble the half, forced by Jamal Morris and recovered by Donovan Mutant playing in his last Cougar game. The Cougs' subsequent possession maybe frustrated me more than any other in real time. The Cougs went three and out on three straight runs, including an incredibly predictable third and short call where it just for the, it seemed like the umpteenth time in this game did not work and went as well, certainly as all of your other delayed draws went. Cougars punt the ball back. The game's still tied. Cajun's getting the ball near midfield. Really did not feel great about this one in real time, but the Cougar defense stepped up again. Cajun stall at the Cougar 34-yard line, kind of stuck in a long down distance. No man's land. They ultimately punted in what would ultimately be his final full drive with the Cougars. Clayton Toon got off to a really strong start, had a 33-yard run, immediately got the Cougars out by, you know, from their end zone. Did unfortunately get immediately after that back-to-back holding penalties. Kind of seemed like the same old story from the season. Cougars were now at this point in an unenviable first and 30 to go situation, though you'd immediately see the Cougars get all those yards back. Toon found Keshawn Carter one more time for a 41-yard completion. Really changed the tone, changed the tenor of that drive. Toon would call his own number a little bit later on third and long, set the Cougs up close to the Cajun end zone with a fresh set of downs and 27 seconds left, but you wouldn't even need that full set of downs. Toon connected with Dell one last time. Dell would beat the Cajuns, star defensive back Braylon Trahan in space, sprint into the end zone untouched further for a game-winning Cougar touchdown. Cajuns would get the ball back with 17 seconds left. You saw DeAnthony Jones get his final collegiate sack on the first play, and Jace Rogers pick Zion Chris on his last game as well, allowing the Cougar offense to officially end the 2022 season with a victory formation and second straight bowl win. And I want to start kind of where I was going before I got into the summary of this game. And I also, I don't want to turn this into a larger referendum on college players who I think make a perfectly reasonable decision to sit out some of these bowls, some of these postseason exhibitions. But I think it says something about this specific Houston Cougar team and the pride they feel in this program that all the guys elected to play in this game didn't fold when your opponent came out the gates a bit stronger and ultimately got the win. I don't think it fills my heart with joy that for not the first time this season, the Cougs certainly looked like the second best team for large parts of the first two quarters of this game. Doesn't fill me with joy, but I think it's also not lost on me that this group clearly didn't check out at halftime. I think Dana said something to the effect of in his halftime comments that U of H looked like the less enthused team of the two, and you kind of wondered at that point what reaction you'd see from the guys. And I think it became pretty apparent pretty quickly in that third quarter that this team wasn't going to roll over for the final 30 game minutes of the season. I don't think a cold Friday before Christmas bowl game was how this team, certainly how, you know, numerous key guys playing their final UH game wanted the 2022 season to end, but you never saw these guys stop fighting. And once the clock hit zeros, you could really see genuinely how much winning this game and ending 2022 on a high note meant to the players and coaches of this program. And this win doesn't wipe out the things that went wrong in the 2022 season, but I mean, if you want some evidence that there are still things in this program worth building upon, I don't think anyone can reasonably look at this team and say they at any point quit on the coaching staff at any point. There's plenty of buy-in, there's plenty of belief. I think the challenge long term obviously is going to be translating some of that belief and buy-in inside the walls into a more consistent on-field product against what's certainly going to be a tougher schedule of opponents going forward. Undeniably, the Cougars, at least at the start, were the second best team dealing with the challenging weather in Shreveport. This was the second coldest game behind that very famous Notre Dame Cotton Bowl in program history. And you could apply that to both sides of the ball, though I thought early on you saw the Cougar offense look a bit off early, and I don't think you could totally divorce that from the weather. And we knew also that this Cajun defense was going to be one of the better units that we saw this season, and on that defense, the Cajun secondary, I think, was going to challenge the Cougars' ability to really make things happen through the air. It was a very good strength versus strength matchup. It's something we talked about a fair amount improving the game. And it just looked off on those first few series. The Cajuns really did a good job early getting pressure on Toon. The O-line that I think looked better at pass blocking in the second half of the season was really struggling early on to figure out what the Cajuns were doing to give Toon clean pockets. Even when he did have time to throw, it didn't seem like the balls were where they needed to be. Receivers weren't in the right spots. Just whatever the reason, it didn't look good. And I thought the Cajuns really did a good job for most of the game trying to take Tank Dell out of it. And I think that's kind of what you'd expect. And I don't think it's a coincidence that things started to kind of turn for the Cougar offense and the passing attack, I think, a bit more specifically once Kishon Carter took the top off the Cajun defense a couple different times on that first touchdown drive. It was really cool also to see Joseph Manjack the fourth out there, I think, in no small part because, you know, I think this fifth game that he's going to play doesn't count towards the season total. I think that was something cool that the governing bodies of the sport did for bowl games, allowing guys to still retain their red shirt and play a fifth game. I think it strengthens U of H case if they want to give Manjack a medical red shirt for the season. The run game had its moments in this one. I don't think Tajon Henry's final stat line properly conveys the positive value he had for the Cougars. He got some tough yards in this game when the Cougs really needed it. I think he was important that final drive as well. And I wish we'd seen more of it before the final drive of the game, but I thought that final drive was a great reminder of what an effective and smart runner Clayton Tune is. The career accomplishments, the throwing for 4,000 yards this season and 40 touchdowns, certainly your most eye-catching stats, but this is also a guy who led the team in rushing yards, even with that ridiculous college rule of sacks counting against rushing totals, and tied for the team lead in rushing touchdowns. I think we've been fairly bullish on the performance of this offensive line, but I think this game was also a good reminder this group can still improve a good bit, perhaps. And I don't think they are, certainly. The staff certainly shouldn't stop looking for immediate help in the trenches in the remaining recruiting window. But I think for some of the struggles, I still do think from a coaching staff that doesn't always know, you know, what the team can do well, we still saw things we didn't want to see, certainly in the first two quarters of this game. And I wanted to highlight something specifically. This team really did not do well on short down and distance situations in this game, which I kind of defined as 3 yards or less to go, whatever down, but 3 yards less to go. There were 12 instances in this game where the Cougars ran an offensive play with 3 yards or less to go for the first down, or if it was a goal to go situation, I included those as well if it was 3 yards or less in those instances. So, but out of those 12 instances, U of H only needed to get the needed yardage for the first down or the touchdown when applicable 4 times on Friday. And I know you're not going to convert 100% of your short yardage situations, certainly not against a good defense like the Cajuns, but a 33% success rate in short down distance situations just isn't good enough. And for the talent and experience of this offense featured in the 2022 season, it was disappointing how you really didn't see this offense get much better handling, whether it was from an execution standpoint, whether it was the staff in a creative way to get those yards. I don't think you saw this team be good enough in power situations. I don't know if you've ever seen this team really be a good, consistent power running team in the 4 years of this coaching staff, which isn't to say there have been offensive positives, but I don't think we've seen this specific area ever be a strength of a Dana Holgorsen offense this go around here. All season, this offense just hasn't been good enough in these have to get a yard or two kind of situations. And maybe if I have enough time in the offseason, I'll look at this for the entirety of the 2022 season and see if the actual data for the season confirms kind of my priors or my anecdotal feeling about the sum total of the season. But a slow start or not, I thought this was still a really good final collegiate effort for Clayton Tune. I think the 229 passing yards he's accounting for, I don't think jumps off the page at you, but he made some really nice throws in pretty adverse conditions. Not just the 3 touchdown passes where he definitely got the ball to the right guy at the right time, but you had those 2 big game-changing completions to Kishon Carter on the 2nd and 4th quarter touchdown drives. Maybe the most important thing against the ULL secondary that I thought was very good at taking the ball away this year, he didn't throw any picks, and to my memory, didn't really throw any balls that deserved a B pick. I mean, in the 13 games the Cajun defense played this season, last Friday was the only, I think, third time they didn't have an interception, and only the 2nd time that the Cajuns didn't force a turnover of any kind in the game. So, not a perfect effort, and one whose imperfections, I think, match the imperfections we saw pop up throughout the 2022 season, but I thought this game was a good final chapter to the college careers of guys like Clayton Tune, Tank Dell, Kishon Carter, and Tajon Henry, who certainly deserve that kind of positive ending to their college career wearing scarlet and albino. And you certainly can't argue that the Cougar defense's last effort of 2022 was anything other than a good effort to end the season on, though maybe not a great 4-quarter effort, kind of echoing what happened with the offense as well. And talked about at the top, it didn't look like at the start we were in for a stellar defensive effort when the Cajuns had that really methodical opening possession touchdown drive. And even though that would be the Cajuns' last scoring drive of the day, the Cougar defense still had some first half issues outside of that opening touchdown drive. I think if the Cajuns had gotten the ball back on their last first half possession with 10 or 15 more seconds, I don't know. I have a hard time saying with a straight face that the Cougars certainly would have kept them out of the end zone there. I think the Cajun offense kind of didn't manage their time great at the end there and kind of just ran out of it rather than the Cougars really stopping them at the end of the first half. And I think it's a fair question whether this game would have felt nearly as still winnable if the halftime lead is a 3-score deficit instead of 2, like it actually bore out it. But you saw this defense really come up big in some key moments, forcing a 3-and-out after ULL returned that punt inside the Cougar 30 to start the second quarter drive. After another special teams gaffe, a 22-yard punt in the fourth quarter, Cougar defense forced the Cajuns to punt it right back for what ended up being the game-winning drive. And I think we knew coming in that this Cajun passing attack had really struggled to generate much downfield. They'd be missing also by far their most effective receiver coming into this one. And thankfully, we didn't see the Cougar secondary allow a lot of big plays. The longest Cajun reception went for 21 yards. But there's the caveat that obviously he looked a little bit banged up, and I don't have the inside info about the health of players for either team in this game. I was still somewhat surprised that Cajun head coach Michael Desormeaux took out their starting quarterback Chandler Fields for true freshman Zion Chris. Our new friends at the Raging Review, who had me on their show, definitely told me that Chris was their quarterback of the future, but even with that increased dual threat that Chris had, I don't know, I might have stuck with a guy who gave the Cougs more problems in the passing game in Fields, but he certainly did look a bit banged up and maybe health was an issue there. We talked about a number of key guys who played in their final Cougar game. I know I mentioned in the how the game was won section, but I really wanted to highlight Cedric Williams' strip and fumble recovery of Cajun running back Chris Smith, which should have been certainly a season highlight real play for another guy playing in his last Cougar game. I don't think the Cougs got lucky with the two fumbles they recovered in the second half either. I think mainly because for all of this Cougar defense's faults on the year, they've been really, really unlucky when it comes to fumbles. The Cougs had only recovered 4 of 20 opponent fumbles coming into this game. That's a 20% ratio there. And I'm sure smarter football people than me would tell you that there are things a defense can do to help recover fumbles more consistently, but I think so much of that is just plain luck of how an oblong ball bounces. So I think it was nice to see last Friday a bit of that luck figuratively bounce back the Cougars' way. Other final games to note, Art Green was, I think, correctly named the game defensive MVP, had a team best 8 solo tackles on pass breakup. Taba Waniki had a team best 10 total tackles. Cougs held the Cajuns' trio of running backs to a total of 67 net rushing yards on 22 carries, though I will note that the Cajun quarterbacks had 10 carries for 58 rushing yards, I think still leaving some unanswered questions after a season where the Cougar defense really struggled with mobile quarterbacks from start to finish. But you saw this defense in some close games early this season, UTSA, Tech, Rice, and Memphis, maybe not play perfect, but you saw in those games a defense that gave the Cougars a chance to win. And you saw on Friday a defense that gave the Cougs a chance to win a close game after a pretty rough second half of the season. I was happy to see this team really play complimentary football and see this defense give an offense that wasn't perfect but was definitely picking up their game a bit in the second half a chance to go win the football game. And it's not going to take away any of the negatives of the year, but like the guys I mentioned earlier on offense, really happy to see guys like DeAnthony Jones, Donovan Buten, Art Green, Taba Waniki, Cedric Williams, Jace Rogers, probably at least a couple others I'm missing, end the season on a high note and play a big part in what was a close Cougar win where you really needed an outstanding defensive effort in the second half. And I don't know if you could take anything away long-term from this win, especially because so many of the key guys in this game have now played their final football game in Scarlet and Albino, but that's kind of the nature of bowl games regardless of the year. I don't think you could have taken much away from last year's Birmingham Bowl victory towards the 2022 season. These are postseason exhibitions, and I'm grateful that for all that went wrong in the 2022 season, that the last on-field memories that these guys will have from the season, whether they're graduating or not, will be this win, and you're going into 2023, at least for the returning guys, with maybe a bit more of a positive taste in your mouth. You're not ending the season on that disappointing loss to Tulsa. You're ending the season on a comeback ball win where really both sides of the ball needed to show a lot of grit. And while we're on the subject of Cougar football, I just want to talk quickly here. Last Wednesday was the earliest day that football verbal commitments could sign an LOI to play for a school. Houston Cougar football signed all of the high school commits they had coming into the day, with a few nice signing day surprises as well. But before we get into it, I will mention that if you'd like a really in-depth look at the latest Cougar football signees and maybe some unsigned targets, a really in-depth breakdown of the class, guys we'd like to see maybe on the 2023 roster or not committed as well, we're going to be doing a podcast premium episode here in the next week or two. I think I'm going to try to do it around the spring enrollment period, so we're picking up and talking about all the guys that are coming to the Cougars from the transfer portal. So if you're already a patron, I think that's good news for you. If you're not, hey, we'd certainly love to have you. Go to shpodcast.com/support and become a supporter of the show. Plug, 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 plug. But we still have plenty to talk about here on the free show. Comes to Cougar football, comes to the signing day additions to this program. I'm going to break up these between the offense and the defense and special teams signings, considering what a vital part of the recruiting process the portal is now. We'll be including transfer commits as well. And I think an important caveat to everything I'm going to talk about tonight is that Cougar football certainly can and will be adding high school and transfer players between now and the start of spring ball, certainly the start of the 2023 fall camp. So this is all current info for December 27th, but if you end up listening to this at a later date, there's a pretty good chance that there are other high school commits or transfers, certainly transfers, joining the program. I want to hit on some big picture recruiting numbers first. The Cougars have signed 15 high school recruits and have three committed Division I transfers as of this moment. Actually, one of those three is enrolled, but not eligible to play this year because of transfer rules. So three Division I transfers who are in some stage of being committed slash on the Cougar football roster. As the Cougars' highest-rated class in the recruiting rankings era by 247 Sports average recruit composite, just fractionally rated better than the 2022 signing class. I'll note that both classes also had a higher average recruit ranking than the much-ballyhooed 2016 class, despite the 2016 class having a consensus five-star in Ed Oliver. For the second year in a row, there were no signing day flips going out either, which is nice. The Cougs only added to their class total last Wednesday, which is always a position you want to be in. And you could say really what you want about Dana Holgorsen and the staff, but I think they've done a really good job, especially these last two classes, identifying guys they want and not getting those recruits poached by other schools. The only current AAC programs with a higher average recruit ranking to this point are the two other departing schools for the Big 12, UCF and Cincy, though the Cougs are ahead of Cincy in recruiting ranking right now, I think just because the Cougars have several more signings in the class. Including transfers right now, 247 has this as the 61st rated class in all Division I FBS, though. Again, worth reiterating, this is a number weighted on number of signees and commits along with average ranking, and is an incomplete number because, like I've said a couple times already, I'm certain UH will not finish this recruiting cycle with a combined 18 high school guys and transfers joining the program. I think it's going to be a pretty sizable group of players, especially considering the Big 12 move we're about to see Cougar football make. And on the biggest picture level, you're seeing that recruiting bump that comes with this pending Big 12 move, but you're still right now admittedly recruiting more like a bottom half of the Big 12 team, though I think the margins are pretty tight there, and considering you're still not actually in the Big 12, I think it's not unreasonable that U of H is where it is right now in terms of recruiting ranking, something you'd still certainly like to see continue to trend upward as this team has actual on-field Big 12 seasons to show recruits in the coming year or two. So we're going to start with defense and special teams. Out of the current 18 total guys, you have an exactly even split of 9 guys on offense and 9 guys on defense and special teams among these commitment slash signees. I want to talk first about your highest rated defensive signee by consensus of really any recruiting service, Justin Benton, an interior defensive lineman out of Covington, Georgia. Now, the first of a few NSD flips for Cougar football, like I said, is the highest rated defense or special teams signing in the class by 247 and basically anyone else who covers recruiting. Benton was a longtime West Virginia commitment, but took an official visit to U of H this month, also took one to a certain burnt orange school in Austin, has a really impressive offer list that includes, among the two schools just mentioned, obviously, but Duke, Arkansas, Vandy, Arizona State, Kentucky, Florida, and numerous others. He was just under that cutoff line between a 3- and 4-star recruit, was a top 60 player in the state of Georgia as well. Just based on his listed size, I've seen him listed around 6'1", 280. I think Benton will play in the interior. That's an exciting position group to look at long-term with him, with A.J. Holmes in this last class, with Chidozie Nwankwo still being a fairly young guy as well. Always the defensive line is an exciting group. And I want to note that Doug Belk has really done a good job getting key contributors from his home state of Georgia, and Benton, I think, should be a good one in this program. Your second highest rated guy is Michael Patterson, another high three-star. One of this class's earlier commitments is one half of a pair of signees from the always salty Fort Bend Marshall program on the southwest side. I remember from his commitment back in June that Patterson was a guy who was really starting to turn heads in the summer camp circuit. U of H, I think, realized that he was a fast riser and did what they needed to do to secure his commitment quickly. He ended up actually, within days of committing to the Cougars, got offers from Washington, Arizona State, along with Tulane and numerous others previously as well. I wanted to mention another longtime commitment as well. Jet Runyon from Aubrey, Texas, kind of borderline Northern Metroplex and the Texoma area up in Denton County, was recruited as both a tight end and defensive end, but had it confirmed on pretty good sources that he will definitely start out his Cougar career on the defensive side of the ball. One of the other signing day surprises on the defensive side was another high three-star linebacker, Latrevion McCutcheon from LBJ High in Austin, was committed to Minnesota for a good bit, but opened up his recruitment back in October, despite very recent offers from Oklahoma State and Nebraska. McCutcheon ended up signing with the Cougars. The Cougs also added a quartet of three-star safeties in this class. Jamal Shaw from West Orange Stark, same high school as one of last year's top signees, Pancake Hunter. Johnsley Barbas from Roswell, Georgia, who was a Cougar flip from Memphis earlier in December. Jalen Stanford from perennial Oklahoma prep power Jenks had a number of power conference offers before he committed over the summer. And one of the recent flips from before signing day, Chris Pearson from Orange Beach, Alabama, near the Gulf Shores area. If you are not familiar with Alabama geography, Pearson was a one-time UAB commit. And I think there's a good chance that one of those quartet of guys that I just mentioned makes some kind of position switch, whether it's going safety to linebacker, safety to corner. I don't expect all four of those guys to remain at that position for the entirety of their college career, but that's all for your defensive signings as of this moment. All the defensive commits you have so far from the high school ranks, but plenty of time for that to change. But also worth mentioning from the portal ranks, the Cougs, while on special teams, added Bama specialist Jack Martin. Martin spent the last two seasons with the Crimson Tide program. He handled kickoffs and place kicking sparingly, but before that did play two seasons with the Troy program, had a very healthy 46.1 yards per punt average his last season with the Trojans, handled kickoff duties both of his seasons at Troy. I think he's going to get an extended look to win the starting place kicker job this year. I think that was a pretty pronounced weakness for the Cougs in the 2022 season. I'd imagine Martin's been told he'll have every chance of winning that job. And I'm pretty curious about who's not here, because the staff really goes after guys in the portal, and I think you're going to need some immediate help there given the struggles of the season and given that you're also losing a majority of your key defensive contributions. And I don't know, I have my doubts that this impending Big 12 move is going to see the staff stand pat and just go into 2023 with the high school guys and guys who are rotation guys or backups this year, with all respect to the high school guys. But when you're making a step up in competition, you're probably not counting on your incoming freshman to be the dramatic change you want on that side of the ball. And of course, we're going to talk the offensive signees as well. Like I said earlier, you have an even 9 offensive signees and 9 defense slash special teams signees slash commits. And 3 of your top 4 rated guys came on offense, according to 247 Sports. Both of the current consensus 4-stars in the class are also projected to be offensive guys. The top rated commit by consensus, I think, of all the recruiting services is receiver Jonah Wilson out of Dekaney High on the north side. Wilson is the current 5th highest rated guy in the recruiting rankings era, according to 247 Sports, just fractionally lower than 2022 signee and breakout star Matthew Golden when he signed last year. Wilson was committed for a good bit to the Cal College in Austin, decommitted at the start of October, and later in the month committed to the Cougars as a consensus 4-star rated national top 300 guy, had offers from basically every big name in the region. Obviously, the Horns, who he's previously committed to, along with A&M, Ohio State, LSU, and many, many others. We've talked about Matthew Golden's season having a positive ripple effect on recruiting. I think Jonah Wilson is Exhibit A. I'm not saying Jonah Wilson made his decision exclusively on how Matthew Golden did, but I think it makes that recruiting pitch very easy when you could say something to the effect of, look at what a big role we gave Matthew Golden this year. that can be you also. So I expect we'll see Wilson get a chance to see the field plenty in the coming season, no matter the increase in competition. And your other four-star at the moment is running back Parker Jenkins, also from the north side. He played at Klein Forest High. If you'll remember, Jenks committed to the Cougars back in August, just before the start of the high school season, over his other finalists, LSU, Oklahoma State, Northwestern, SMU, and Boston College, a guy who certainly has legit track speed, clocked a 10.8 100-meter dash back in the spring of this year, was a high school All-American sprinter as well. And as we'll get to in a second here, I'm sure, Jenkins isn't the only exciting running back in this group of signees, but to get a guy with his athleticism and his bona fides to what's already a really exciting running back group, I think, is very welcome. The very first commitment of this class actually came on New Year's Day of this year, was another Fort Bend Marshall signee who I alluded to earlier, high three-star receiver Jacoby Banks. Banks was also the first guy, I think kind of fittingly, to send in his paperwork on the early signing day as well. He spent some of his career at quarterback. He was actually Fort Bend Marshall's primary quarterback in the 2021 season, switched to receiver in this most recently completed season, as that's his most projectable position at the next level. And I do think it's interesting that the top two receivers, in this class both played a fair amount of quarterback over their prep career. I mean, I think that could also just be an obvious case of a high school team putting its best athlete at its most impactful offensive position, but I think that's something interesting to watch, and interesting that these guys potentially understand the field, not just as a receiver, but can understand it from the perspective of playing two different positions as well. Another receiver, I think the last early signing day pleasant surprise was Jerion Wallace out of Aubrey, Texas, another high three-star, had a ton of good offers, Florida State, K-State, Purdue, Nebraska, Georgia Tech, and many others, but did not commit until he signed with the Cougars last Wednesday. I don't really put too much stock into high school stats, because you're talking a bunch of guys who are going to be the most dominant, if not, you know, one of the most two or three dominant athletes on the field really most of the time, given just the level of guys who are playing Division I ball is very, very high. That being said, I thought Wallace's 100-plus catches and well over 20 yards per reception this past season definitely passes the eye test. He's listed at 6'3", 180, the tallest of all your receiver signees in this class. And someone I'm really excited about isn't the highest-rated guy in this class, but Rashawn Sanford, a three-star running back out of Harker Heights. Again, just got done talking about how I don't think high school player stats are really that useful, but holy smokes, just under 5,000 combined rushing yards and 52 touchdowns just in his past two seasons of high school ball. Was absurdly productive at Harker Heights, a always good program in that Central Texas part of the state that kind of extends from Williamson County to Waco, Temple, Belton, Killeen, and thereabouts. And I just saw over the season a number of people who cover high school ball or cover recruiting in Texas talk about how underrated Sanford is. And I'm very of the opinion that if he was listed closer to 6 foot, that he'd be in the stratosphere of recruits that U of H just isn't in play for. But I think it's really well-trodden ground for undersized guy, a guy listed at 5'7", like Sanford, who got maybe overlooked because of his measurables, to come to this Cougar football program with a chip on his shoulder and kick butt at the college level. And this is such an exciting running back group. You have Jenkins, who I mentioned earlier, now adding Sanford as well to a group that already includes Alton McCaskill, Stacey Sneed, and Brandon Campbell. I think that's going to be a really exciting position group to watch going forward. I think you have an embarrassment of riches there, a good problem to have, the kind of problem Dana Holgorsen, I'm sure, wants to have with that group. In the trenches right now, you have one high school signee and one transfer who is on the roster but couldn't play in this most recent season because of when he joined the program. The transfer is former Longhorn offensive lineman Jalen Garth. He committed to the program back in August. He's currently listed on the roster but couldn't play this season. Was originally a four-star recruit out of Port Neches over in the Golden Triangle, was a part of Tom Herman's last class in Austin, played two games as a backup in 2021, but I think before this season saw the writing on the wall that Longhorn program under Steve Sarkisian really made a push to sign lots of blue chip high school linemen, and probably saw his role as being a reserve at best. And I think Garth this coming season will certainly get a chance to compete for the right tackle spot opposite Patrick Paul. And the one high school signee was one of the earliest commitments in this class, another Golden Triangle guy, Caden Bowie out of Memorial High in Port Arthur. I believe Bowie missed all of his junior season injured, but UH is one of his first offers, and despite getting some good ones between the summer of 21 when he was offered and his commitment, Bowie really stuck with the Cougars. And like a majority of their signees, under majority of U of H's offensive line signees, excuse me, I don't know why that was such a hard sentence to form, Bowie played tackle, but I think just looking at his measurables, he is going to move to guard at the college level. Brandon Jones, the offensive line coach, I can't get my words right, had a really good interview last year, I want to say before last season, on Cougar alumnus Rowdy Harper's podcast, Run the Power, where he talked about offensive line play, had some great stories about Mike Leach in his days playing Texas Tech, but said almost exclusively they recruit guys who played tackle at the high school level, regardless of where they project. Like, they're looking for guys who are tackles at the high school level and move them over there, and Bowie is no exception. I think of all the position groups we're talking about tonight, I think O-line is going to have the most additions between now and when we start the spring semester, and certainly when we start spring ball. I mean, you've had so far 5 offensive linemen, all backups, enter the transfer portal since the regular season ended, and a couple more since the offseason started in earnest. And none of those guys started a game this year, but you'd imagine the staff isn't going to go into the coming season without replacing most of those guys' spots on the roster. You certainly don't want to get caught thin in any position. I don't think there's any position we get caught thin less at than offensive line. The current lone high school signee at quarterback is Caleb McMichael from Roswell, Georgia. Same town as defensive commitment Johnsley Barbas, though not the same high school. McMichael is somebody I'm sure the staff has brought in as a multi-year developmental guy, though I think like Sanford in Central Texas, we saw people who covered Georgia prep football really convinced that McMichael was an underrated prospect in what was a particularly deep year for recruiting in the Peach State. I think every specific scouting report I've seen on him mentions in some way his ability to improvise, his smoothness of mechanics, even when he's in a situation where he's throwing on the run. Though, in the more immediate future, I think the Cougars should expect to see Texas Tech quarterback Donovan Smith, who announced last week officially after many weeks of whispers that he was transferring to U of H and likely main the quarterback position in the coming season or two. Cougar fans will probably be at least familiar with Smith in passing. He led the Red Raiders to a dramatic and very painful 2 overtime win over the Cougs in Lubbock. He did throw 3 interceptions in that one, but also threw for 350 yards and ran for what would ultimately be the game-winning score in the second overtime. He took a really interesting route to get here. He grew up mostly in Las Vegas, prepped at Superpower Bishop Gorman. He actually didn't ever earn the starting quarterback job there in 3 years, didn't become a starting quarterback anywhere until he moved with his dad, who is a recent former Texas Tech running back coach, DeAndre Smith, to the Lubbock area and committed to play for the previous Red Raiders staff. After the dismissal of Matt Wells in 2021, Smith would start the final 4 games of last season. Looked really promising off the bench in a blowout loss to OU, ended up starting his first collegiate game against Iowa State, threw for 322 yards and over 10 yards an attempt in a win that got the Red Raiders bowl eligible. Also threw for 252 yards and rushed for a touchdown in a blowout win of Mississippi State in the Red Raiders bowl game last year. And in this current season, in addition to that dramatic win over U of H, Smith was the starter when the Red Raiders upset the Longhorns in Lubbock in week 4, threw for 301 yards, rushed for a touchdown, threw for 2 more in that one. Did ultimately lose his job to a combination of Baron Morton and Tyler Shuck after a loss to K-State. Did come in with some regularity as a short yardage and goal line situational quarterback, rushed for 3 touchdowns in the Red Raiders' final 3 regular season games. And I don't think fan opinions on a quarterback are a perfect indicator, but the opinions on Smith, I think, among Red Raider fans are all at least somewhat positive, with, I think, a not small number of people still out there thinking he was the best quarterback on that roster. I would count that as a good sign. Did some good stuff early this season, but I don't think fit Tech's air raid system with this new staff as well as he did previous OC Sonny Cumbie's offense. And I'm kind of curious how last 12 months or so play out for Smith if Cumbie doesn't end up getting offered the head coaching job at La Tech and ends up staying on as Joey McGuire's offensive coordinator in Lubbock as he'd previously planned. I would say Smith is certainly your odds-on favorite to start at quarterback in week 1 of the 2023 season. So that's it for the Cougar signees as well, but this is very much a not final topic. I think the staff is going to add a lot in the portal, and I think we're going to have plenty to talk about with Cougar football adding players for the coming season for spring ball and what have you as well. So not the final time we're going to talk about this topic here, but wanted to give a good review of the 2023 class if you haven't been following the recruiting super close. And while we're on the subject of recruiting, I have a quick volleyball update here. The Cougars added a local product from one of the sports' most powerhouse programs, Louisville outside hitter Nena Mbanu, elected to play her fifth and final collegiate season with Cougar Volleyball after playing the previous 4 years with the Louisville Cardinal program that has been quite good, and just recently were the national runners-up to a certain burnt orange school in Austin. Mbanu prepped at Klein High School, was an important contributor to this year's Louisville team, making their national championship match versus Longhorns. She appeared in 29 matches, was fifth on the cards in total kills and kills per set, was a part-time starter the previous two seasons as well. And I think Mbanu is going to be a big part of a Cougar offensive attack that returns a great frontline player in Abby Jackson, but did lose a few key contributors to graduation as well. And it feels a little weird to have it on this late in the show, but I think a justifiable decision given the volume of football and football recruiting stuff to talk about tonight. But of course, we have plenty of Cougar men's basketball to talk about, a recent game, but I think more notably the beginning of American Conference play for the very last time tomorrow, probably today if you're listening, for your Cougars. But gonna talk about it real quick. The Cougars did face McNeese last Wednesday at the Fertitta Center, as we talked about. I think when we previewed the game, McNeese was and almost certainly will be the worst team the Cougars see this regular season. And you can only glean so much from what was certainly a very bad mismatch and a very decisive Cougar win. And quick aside, I think it's kind of a stupid thing to be annoyed about, but whenever I see someone we follow on social media posting something the effect of, wow, insert name of team here, has won its last three games by a margin of 40 points, or by an average of 40 points, and you go look into it a little bit, and the three games are two non-D1 teams, and the actual D1 opponent is like McNeese's caliber, and I'm too polite to do so, but I just want to scream, that's not impressive, sorry, at the person, but I don't, decorum and whatnot. But I'll take my own advice and not spend too much time getting worked up over a Cougar win over the current number 352 team in the country, according to Mr. Ken Pomeroy. But worth noting, this was McNeese's worst margin of defeat this year, despite also playing Baylor and Tennessee in their non-conference. It was nice to see Marcus Sasser lighted up from deep, hopefully keep building his confidence after that earlier eye and face injury. But of course, the best individual performances to talk about, certainly what we're going to highlight here tonight, for me, were JVA Francis and Emmanuel Sharp. I mean, Francis in his 25 minutes on the court was a perfect 9 of 9 shooting from the field, had one more offensive rebound than the entire McNeese team, led all scorers with 23 points. And I'm not saying I'm not considering the level of competition here, but I think if you're a Cougar fan, it's hard not to be excited about the dunks. It's hard not to be excited about the athleticism and the confidence from a guy who really has only seen meaningful Division I minutes in this current 13-game season. I thought it was also really impressive that despite that really horrendous start at the free throw line, he missed 5 of his first 6 shots at the charity stripe. He made all 4 remaining free throws in his last 2 trips to the line. That, I think to me, regardless of an opponent you're playing, speaks to a guy who doesn't get in his own head when one aspect of his game isn't going perfectly. Samson said in his post-game conference, he talked about Francis's progress. He talked about how Francis is starting to earn more and more of his trust in the young season. I got to also mention Emmanuel Sharp going 6 of 10 on three-pointers as he started to gradually earn a bigger role off the bench. I think it's starting to become noteworthy. I mean, I remember my first takeaway watching Sharp for the first time, that Northern Colorado game, was that there's very little tentativeness in his game. That's not going to ever really be that guy's problem. He's always going to be a guy who kind of has a green light in his head, and that's not going to lead to perfect decision-making 100% of the time, but I think that's definitely a trait you want from someone who you expect at some point to be a go-to scoring guard in your program. It may not have seemed significant at the time, but when I was watching the Virginia game, I noticed that Samson found minutes for both Sharp and Francis while the game was not out of hand and on the road against one of the very best teams you're going to see this year, that he trusted both those guys even to play limited minutes on the road in Charlottesville. I think is a very positive endorsement for both. The only other thing I'm going to say about this game is that I'm going to give a big... over here, I'm giving a big round of applause to the crew that called this game, Rick Crawford, Garrick Shannon, and Jaron Williams, for calling a total of 16 fouls between the two teams and just not making any of us endure a 2.5-hour, foul fest and what was just absolutely going to be probably a blowout 10 times out of 10. So kudos to Mr. Crawford, Mr. Shannon, and Mr. Williams for that one. But going to talk mainly about what I mentioned earlier, the Cougar basketball team going into American Conference play. And for the last time, we're going to look ahead to an American Athletic Conference season for the third time in five seasons. That's going to open up against the Tulsa Golden Hurricane. And one would presume this will be the last trip Cougar men's basketball makes to the Reynolds Center for a good bit. And the Golden Hurricane are led by first-year head coach Eric Conkle. He spent the previous seven seasons as head coach at Louisiana Tech. Before that, was an assistant under Jim Larrañaga at George Mason, Miami. Won about 67% of his games at La Tech. Did not make the NCAA tournament there, but I think kind of a hard ask in Conference USA, and certainly was a team that won a lot more games than not there. I think a higher on paper that made sense, though obviously very long until we have any conclusive results about how well this is going to really work at Tulsa. Looks like he has a pretty sizable rebuild on his hands, though, at least here. In year one, they are currently the Golden Hurricane, rated as the 209th best team in Division One per KenPom, have a 4-7 overall record. And out of those four wins, only one is against a team rated higher than 294th in the country, at early win over Loyola Chicago in about mid-November. Conkle was able to get a really nice return guy from the portal. I would argue Tulsa's best guard from last year's team, Sam Griffin, is currently averaging 15 points per game, but kind of looking at his numbers, seems like a guy who's carrying a bit more of the offensive load than is ideal. JUCO big man Bryant Selabong, averaging a really respectable just under 11 points and 8 boards per game. Chicago State transfer Brandon Betson is shooting a really good 46% from 3-point range, is currently top 100 individually at the moment. But and that's not even a stat that's skewed by bad competition. I looked at it. Betson is a combined 6 of 9 against by far Tulsa's best two non-conference opponents, Oklahoma State and Oral Roberts. He shot it well against everyone. I think the problem for Tulsa is, how are they going to score points against the Cougars? I mean, there's just not anything that the Golden Hurricane do especially well on offense, on a team level in the season so far. I mean, they're not a bad three-point shooting team. They're not bad when it comes to turning the ball over, but that's about it. They've played one team this year that profiles similarly to the Cougars defensively, Oklahoma State, who is currently 18th in the country in defensive efficiency. In that one, the Golden Hurricane scored 56 points, lost by 26, and frankly, just looking at the box score on that one, that was a 26-point margin that probably flattered Tulsa a bit. Oklahoma State was up 34 going into the game's final 10 minutes, and none of the other 10 teams that Tulsa has faced so far are even in the top 100 nationally in defensive efficiency. So the Cougars will, if nothing else, represent a different level of challenge than most of what Tulsa has seen in the young season. I think what really stood out to me, though, what I think is really going to make this a difficult matchup for the Golden Hurricane, is that this is a team that's really struggled grabbing offensive boards, and they're even worse at keeping opponents from grabbing offensive rebounds themselves. And you just know how important offensive rebounding is year in, year out to what the Cougars do. And I think that's, for me, maybe the most damning thing for any hope of a Tulsa upset here, is that they're one of the 25 or so worst teams in the country at getting to the free throw line, one of U of H's real pronounced weaknesses. And even when they get to the line, are only hitting just over 67% on their freebies. They're a better defensive team, but I don't know if I would classify Tulsa as a good defensive team. Opponents have admittedly really struggled shooting from deep against the Golden Hurricane, but I think that only goes so far when you're 281st in the country at opponent 2-point field goal percentage. I think the Oklahoma State game was a good example of this. The Cowboys, you know, shot 33% on three-pointers. Not terrible, not great, but that was all kind of a moot point because Oklahoma State made nearly 60% of their shots inside the arc. They're not a team with a lot of heft in the low post, and we've seen at times this year the ability of the Cougs to create offense with Wani Roberts, Jairus Walker, and more and more Javier Francis as well. And I think there will be conference games this season where the Cougars should be on upset alert, but I don't think this should be one of those. Even on the road, even considering how the last three head-to-heads have been two close Tulsa wins and one very close Cougar win the last time. I mean, U of H has played several teams with a profile, I think, pretty similar to Tulsa this year, and none of those games were close. And unfortunately for Tulsa, I don't think this one should be either. And hopefully these words aren't played back to me after a horrible and unexpected upset tomorrow night. And I think the more competitive game will likely be on New Year's Eve, Saturdays, the Cougars will return home, get what should be a much stiffer test in the form of the UCF Knights. They are coming off a trio of disappointing seasons, though. The season before that was the 2018-2019 season, which is pretty undisputably the best season in that program's history. Johnny Dawkins, after that trio of disappointing seasons, did a good job revamping this roster. The Knights brought in a really good high school recruit, a consensus four-star national top 100 guy from Fort Lauderdale, Taylor Hendricks, a power forward, and brought in a bunch of transfers as well. CJ Kelly, Brandon Suggs, Ethiel Horton, and Michael Durr, a good JUCO guard. Jalen Young, who started the majority of their games as well. And I want to talk about Hendricks first. He's really lived up to every bit of the hype. He's averaging a hair over 15 points per game, 16.5 boards so far, making 46% of his threes, though, in the national top 100 for overall offensive rating. I mean, you're just not going to see too many guys this season, certainly in conference play, who are as much of a matchup problem as Hendricks. He can really score at all levels, a true three-level guy, a guy with a good jumper, a guy with a good three-pointer, a guy who can dunk it and has the requisite post moves as well. I think it'll be really fun to watch Hendricks versus what's been a pretty salty Cougar front court this year. And as a team, the Knights have been really good at shooting the three ball and really good at grabbing offensive boards, which is something that's going to challenge the Cougars as well. We've seen the Cougars at times let some opponents maybe have a bit more joy than Kelvin Sampson like grabbing offensive rebounds. But I'll also say the Knights, for a team with a lot of size, I think they're the 32nd tallest team in Division One. They haven't done a really good job scoring inside. They're bottom 60 or so in turnover percentage as well, and are not a team that gets the free throw line with a lot of consistency. The Knights also don't have very many weaknesses defensively, though. They did let UNC Asheville and Samford score a bunch against them, but there are many other counterexamples of the Knights shutting down opponents as well, including a really impressive neutral site win over Oklahoma State back in November. This is a team that's top 55 nationally in both 2-point and 3-point field goal percentage and 49th in opponent turnover percentage. So Saturday should be a good one. I think the return trip to Orlando in January will be one of the two toughest games the Cougs see in conference play. And I'm excited to see how these teams match up for the first time at the Fertitta Center. I would say certainly an exciting one, certainly a reason to make a trip to the Fertitta Center part of your New Year's Eve plans. So that's it for me tonight. I really appreciate those of you who bear with me talking all things Cougars, talking solo. Hopefully didn't make too many flubs for you to not enjoy this episode. Enjoy the Independence Bowl talk, enjoy the recruiting talk, and enjoy some Cougar men's basketball talk as well. Obviously, we're going to be back here next time with both Dustin and I, including a premium episode coming later this week, reviewing the 2022 season. We, of course, appreciate a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. I know every podcast you listen to says that, but I promise you it's very, very beneficial for those of us who are trying to spread the good word of Houston Cougar Athletics. So 5-star review, become a patron of the pod, give us a one-time donation. Any or all that stuff is very much appreciated, but really appreciate those of you who listened all the way to the end who endured me and endured everything that I do in a solo episode. And as always, go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los
Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door in. No cap. No cap. No cap. No cap. No cap. No cap.